Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1022. Hey, New York, I'm gonna be in your town. October 3rd, 4th, and 5th. That's Thursday, Friday, Saturday of the week that this is posting. At Caroline's, one show Thursday, two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. Go to carolines.com for tickets. I hope to see you there. Bring a pop toy or something. I'll sign it. All right. If you want to have your event or thing posted to the ID10T community cork board, you can email events at ID10T.com. Like Mike Bona, who writes, I'm very excited about an upcoming comedy show that I'm producing on October 20th at Boomtown Brewery in Los Angeles. We'll be hosting our fourth annual Laughs for Giraffes comedy show. This event will be raising funds for the Giraffe Conservation Foundation to help protect wild giraffe populations. Their populations have declined by 40% in the past 30 years, and they hope to put an end to their decline. This year, we're also supporting African Pangolin Working Group to protect wild pangolin, which are the most trafficked mammal on the planet. Please come out to see this amazing show featuring Christina Patzitsky, Kurt Braunohler, John Doerr, Kyle Kinane, James Domine, and more. That is a hell of a lineup. Also, by the way, pangolins are super cool. And if you don't know what they are, you should look them up because they are rad little creatures. They're like armor-plated anteaters, basically. And they look really neat. Occasionally I'll think about, oh, I'm going to get a tattoo. And then I don't because I can't imagine that I would want anything on my body for the rest of my life and not go, why did I do this? And I've often thought like a pangolin would be a really rad tattoo to get because they're just so intricate looking. Anyway, go out and see the amazing show Laughs for Giraffes. Ticket links, Los Angeles. AAZK.org or on Twitter at laughs the number 4 and giraffes. Jay writes, I thought some of my fellow listeners might enjoy my web series Cooking for Villains. It's a cooking show where we use the tropes of comic book and sci-fi villainy for culinary purposes, like enhanced pancake flipping with Doc Ock style tentacles and doubling meatball output with a cybernetic organism. It's a totally DIY production. Every 5-minute episode takes a couple of months to create. This project is very much a labor of love that combines several of my biggest passions. I'm going to continue to make it regardless, but getting a few more eyeballs on something you've worked hard on is also nice. It is all at cookingforvillains.com. That's F-O-R, this time spelling out for. Or you can just search Cooking for Villains on YouTube. Great job, Jay. Mike and Jay, ladies and gentlemen. And now, this episode is Joaquin Phoenix, who is promoting Joker, which is in theaters October 4th, and you should go see it. He was great. You know, we just kind of shot the shit, and he's really funny. Just a really fun, funny guy. Again, didn't know what to expect, never met him, and I was just delighted. So we had a really, 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 really great time, and I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed being there for it. We recorded it a couple weeks ago at the Four Seasons Hotel in Los Angeles. Well, you know, sometimes I can get people to come out to the house or Pinniped, which is what I call the place where the podcast studio is, because the first owner was a seal trainer. And so I renamed it Pinniped Manor. So sometimes I get people to come out to Pinniped, but if they're doing a press junket or whatever and they agree to kind of squeeze it in, then we typically will go to the Four Seasons. So we were at the luxurious Four Seasons in Beverly Hills, California, for this episode number 1022 of the ID10T podcast with Joaquin Phoenix. Roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
It's interesting, like, especially with this movie, because I don't read reviews and I don't read any pieces that are like written about the movie, so I don't really know what people think. And I'm not sure I do now because maybe they're all lying to me. I don't know.
No, but, I'm sure.
But you know, you start to get a sense at like how everyone seems to react to this movie differently, and so that's interesting. I mean, that I think has kept it lively in some ways.
What's been the sort of prevalent, like, what have they been saying all day?
Like, what kind of, from judging by the questions and what you're getting hit with, what are you gleaning from that?
I mean, I don't know, to be honest, most of the questions are like about dieting.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
What's like the Joker's fitness regime? Well, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
That is kind of funny that that's one of the things. I mean, does that bother you? Because you're like, well, yes, that's part of it, but a lot of other things went in other than the diet process.
You know what? I mean, honestly, I can kind of, I can get talking about almost anything and think that it's interesting because I'm self-obsessed.
You're in the
really,
right business.
That's really interesting. My goodness, that's interesting. No, but like stuff like the dieting, it ends up, it's not just a physical thing. It affects your emotional, mental state, and it changes the way that I move, and it suddenly made me aware of my body in a different way, and that affected kind of the movement of the character and the dance. So it's not just this kind of, oh, the actor lost weight for the movie. It is something more to me. So as soon as I start like talking about it, I remember all this shit and I go like, oh, yeah, that was fucking wild. I hadn't really expected to do that. I didn't know that was going to be part of this character.
Yeah.
But it started to emerge based on the weight loss. So we got the weight loss question out of the out of the way.
You know, Arthur
so,
would have been fine if you just had more vegetables and had a more balanced diet. He probably would have been fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did see the movie tonight, and it's fucking amazing. And but the thing that I want people to understand about it, there's no superhero element to it at all. You're basically, you come in with, you understand the foundation, you know who the character becomes, you know, like you have all this back knowledge. And so it's really interesting because you're really just watching a poor dude unravel over time. And a friend of mine who I think you talked to yesterday named Tiffany Smith, I talked to her afterwards and she goes, this movie makes me want to be nicer to people in public.
I think she said that to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you agree?
I think it's more complex than that. I think that's maybe, here's the thing. Whatever your reaction is valid. And I think it says something about you. And I think that's what's nice about the movie, right? It's not didactic. It's not telling you what you're supposed to feel or the reaction you're supposed to have towards the character. I think that's really rare for most movies. But certainly for something that might be considered the superhero genre.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's valid, but for me, it's much more complex than
sure,
than
sure,
that.
Sure. I mean, the one thing that I was really trying, because you're pretty much in every scene of the movie.
My apologies.
No, it's great, but I also feel empathy for you as a person because you are essentially all day, every day. What was your shoot schedule? How long?
I can't remember.
It was probably months you were working on this.
Several months.
So how are you – do you just have to live in that space? Are you good at like, okay, I'm home from work now. I've punched a clock. Or do you have to unwind and detox emotionally?
Hopefully you don't know the difference. Hopefully there's not – I think if you're able to identify yourself and the character, then you're probably not in the right place.
Right.
But I wouldn't – I don't know what method acting is. I don't understand this. I don't know what it is. But I wouldn't make any effort when I got home to try and shake things. Mm-hmm. But I don't think about it that way. I just go home and start prepping for the next day and the week ahead. But I never felt like I need to let something go or. In fact, I just wanted to work more. I mean, I was so frustrated. Like, the weekends were the absolute worst time for me. I couldn't stand it. Like, 2 days off. And I go, what the fuck do you do? So, you know, for me, really, every day, we'd wrap. This isn't an exaggeration. I would go home. Sometimes I would look at some of the dailies from the previous work, and then I would call Todd. First we would text for a couple hours until we finally realized we just have to talk. So we're going back and forth. And then we would talk for an hour or 2 hours about what we're shooting, in the next week, what we already shot, what seems like it's working, what isn't, what we might want to try. And then we would go to set, and I would get to set early, you know, sometimes 2 hours early. The last 3 weeks, I think that we were on set 2 hours earlier than our call every day, and we would meet in our trailer and talk about the day.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to be working all the time.
I think it's really interesting to hear that you were watching dailies, because I know a lot of performers who are like, I don't want my performance influenced by what, you know, like they don't want it to get in their way of judging themselves. Mm-hmm. And so it's, but to hear.
I'd never done it before. Maybe, you know, 25 years ago, I saw dailies. I've never watched the monitor. And Todd was just one day, he was like, I didn't even want to look at. He said, just look at the shot and look at the stuntman doing this shot. I just want you to see what it looks like. And I didn't want to look at it. And then he was like, it's wide enough where we can get the stunt guy to do this shot if you kick in the garbage. And I went, come on, man. I got this.
Can kick some garbage.
Dude, I got it. And I kicked the garbage and like tore some ligament or something. Like instantly, it's in the movie. You see me like sit down.
Yeah.
Like I kick in the garbage and I sit down. It's because I just was like, I had this horrible shooting pain through my body and I immediately sat down and I couldn't shoot. I couldn't do another take.
At least they used it though. If you're going to injure yourself, at least it got used.
That's right. And so then when that happened, he said, look, will you please watch the monitor? Because I want to show you that, you know, Izzy is a genius stunt guy who worked playing my character. And I said, fine. I watched it. And then a couple of days later, I looked at another wide shot. And then I started looking at some of the takes on the monitor, which I'd never done before. And I had always had that fear, like it's going to start influencing me and the character and I won't be able to stay inside of it because mm-hmm. I'll be thinking about it objectively. And then there's a point where I started watching dailies and first just like some selects and then I started watching it and it was strange. I thought it was helpful.
And is it something you think you're going to do from now on, or was it just specific to this?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, every movie is different, and I never would have anticipated that's something I would do for any movie, but it just was right for this one.
Yeah, and I love hearing that. I love hearing about the work that you put into it, because I do think people like, you know, people like to romanticize this idea of like, oh man, you know, you're a performer, you just get struck with inspiration, you just kind of breeze in, you let the moment take. But hearing about how much work goes into it to make, because you don't see all the work, it seems seamless when you're watching it. And I love the idea of the craft of it rather than just like, oh, the clouds open up and it's so like hippy dippy.
Well, to me, it's both things. I have that experience as well, but I think like it requires a lot of work to get to a place where you can be open to inspiration. I don't really understand the process. I've never figured it out. I don't have like a set way of working, and I think that you can't because you're working with a different filmmaker, and it changes each time. But on this, I think we went through the script, Todd and I, a lot together, reading through the entire script and working on things and talking about possibilities of ways to play each scene. But really, there's a point where we started to identify what we thought might be like the motivation for the character in a particular scene. And the moment we did that, it just like sucked the life out of the scene and it just became dead. And I think we realized like we need to have a lot of possibilities that we can rely on if we need it. But we need to go in and be open to whatever kind of feeling overtakes us in that moment. It was a really interesting way of working, but it seemed like that's what the character demanded, really, mm-hmm. because I don't think he fucking knows what he's going to do from one moment to the next.
Right.
It seemed like if we had decided that in advance, it just wouldn't work. And, you know, I think there were a couple times, remember shooting a scene where he gets the gun for the first time and he stands up and he starts dancing with his shirt off and kind of has this fantasy about talking to this girl in a club while he's dancing and this feeling of empowerment. And I think we didn't know that we were going to do that. And so we did the first take and Ty goes, well, that's fine, except that we're looking at the ceiling and all the flags because the camera doesn't know that we're going that way. And so then we were like, because we talked about these possibilities, but I didn't know that I was gonna stand up there and then. And I think that just, I think hopefully that gives it some kind of energy that's hard to capture, like unless you're actually experiencing it.
Yeah. I mean, because the movie is, I guess I would call it the dystopian 70s. It's mm-hmm. sort of this kind of, you know, it's Gotham at its low point, mm-hmm. basically. But obviously, I'm sure other people probably brought this up, but there is the sort of parallels between, like, is this where our culture is at right now? You know, this sort of this general dissatisfaction and sort of polarized, disparate class structures and people just wanting some kind of change for, you know, for the common man. I mean, does it feel a little – does any of it feel like sort of a commentary on contemporary culture?
It does to me, but I think there are some people that are going to view this as just a movie that seems like entertaining about mm-hmm. this character that they know of and they're going to enjoy it. And there are other people that are going to read into it and feel like there's a deeper meaning and commentary.
Yeah.
And both those points of view are valid.
Sure.
And so I always struggle when I'm doing press with how to talk about it because for me, I don't like watching trailers or reading about a movie before I see it.
Right.
I don't want your opinion to influence me. I mean,
right.
To me, it kind of defeats the purpose of it.
Right.
You know, for me, what I enjoy about it is projecting my own feelings onto the character. So I always struggle with like how to talk about it, and especially this one, which I think, you know, it's almost like a Rorschach test for the audience. It's kind of like what you want it to be, it can be.
Yeah.
And I think that I agree with what you're saying, and I understand that, but I think it's going to be something different for everybody else.
I think that's a perfect answer for that. And I always struggle, too, just on this side of it, you know, when studios – I mean, I really wanted to see this movie. There are a lot of movies where people go, well, you know, like we're not really going to do the podcast unless you see the movie first. And it's like, yeah, but we can't really talk – can't really talk about it too much because you can't spoil anything. You don't want to give anything away, and all the questions that you would have – after seeing someone, it's not like I can specifically say, oh, in the scene with the girl from down the hall, da-da-da, because then people are going to go, well, fuck, I didn't want to know that yet, you know? And you want to leave it open to interpretation.
I know, or like the scene with Aquaman. Like,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Like, when he comes in on the porpoise over the building, it's like, what a fucking great...
That's such an amazing moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't want to ruin that for people.
No. And then when he kills the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, like the dolphin just went right through.
Right.
I thought that was a really good integration of all those things.
Right.
So I think people are just going to love it. And Joker dies at the end. What a great way to end the movie.
Right? The only way to end the movie.
The only way
to... But you wouldn't want to ruin that for people.
No. Like, you don't want that to happen.
It's nice that...
They're going to get to experience it for themselves. Yeah, exactly. But it is... Especially in a culture where spoilers are, like, really socially on the level of what used to just be reserved for, like, crime. You know? So now it just, like, people really... And I do think it's because I don't remember it being like that when we were growing up. Did you have, like, super spoiler rage when we were growing up?
No, but it was hard to spoil things at that time in the Dark Ages when we grew up.
In the 1900s.
It was difficult, right? I think it's different now, probably, because of this new technology.
Sure. But I also think that, you know, people, it's this weird kind of self-fulfilling, self-propagating machine of, like, you know, we want to be distracted all the time, but we can't really process all the information. And so we're just looking for little moments to get some kind of an endorphin rush, and it's like, oh, seeing a surprising thing in a movie is like our, it's like a drug now, you know, where you just, you want to experience it. And if someone blows it, they've taken something away from you, a morsel of joy.
Yeah. I mean, I did actually beat up my sister because she told me the ending of a movie.
What movie?
This was just last week, actually. but yeah, I don't understand that. But now spoilers are a big thing, right? Because it used to be that the people that had access to the movie in advance were journalists.
Sure.
As they probably had a relationship with the studio or the company that made the movie, and they go, obviously, we're not going to spoil this, and then you got to get to them. Now, all sorts of people have access to it, and they don't give a fuck, and they just kind of put it out there, right? So it's probably changed a bit, right?
As it has, but I also – I guess it's probably because people had seen the movie before, but when I saw the screening the other night – at the Dolby Theater, I was expecting them to be like, lock your phone in a bag. And they didn't. Like, everyone was allowed to, like, just
film
phone.
It. Film it. Put it online. They're like, absolutely, just film it. Put it online.
Yeah. I streamed it on Twitch. People loved it, by the way. It was really great. No, but that level of protection, you know, that we've really commodified the element of surprise now in our culture. Do you go see movies, or do you kind of watch? Do you just go to the movies ever?
I do just go to the movies ever.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, I do. I can't remember the last one I saw. I do. I'm not going to say.
Yeah. You know what? It's better to say. You know, it's because if you do, then people...
It's a spoiler.
Not only is it a spoiler, but don't you kind of feel the pressure sometimes of like... Every time you, like, if you take a side on something or say something, it's like, oh, God, then it's just like, what, you know, just being judged over stupid things. Does that stress you out at all?
I don't know, but I'm not on, that sounds like something that's a result of being on social media. Like, I wouldn't know how that would happen. Maybe it does happen.
Right.
You know, but I'm just not aware of it.
Yeah, you've made the right decision, by the way, and you don't need to be on social media.
Yeah, I don't think I do.
Did it ever tantalize you in any way?
No, no, not at all. But I didn't. I'm trying to think of what the first. I think like Twitter was maybe the first thing that I was. That is what it's called, right?
That is what it's called. Good. Still called Twitter.
Because you said Twitch, and I said I don't know what the fuck that is.
Oh, it's a live streaming platform for mainly for gamers, but you know, people they put a bunch of Bob Ross episodes on Twitch once. You know, it's like they just stream content to it.
Yeah, so I can't remember. I think it was Twitter. I was like, you know, where are you and what are you doing? It's kind of like the basis of what you were saying. I know, like. Well, I don't want anyone to know where I am, and what I'm doing is so fucking boring that why would I share that with anybody? It just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it is sort of the – social media is really the tabloiding of our culture, where it's like, used to just be tabloids. Now everyone's a fucking tabloid.
Right, yeah.
And it's also a weird addiction too. And so it – do you feel like – do you play games or anything? Is there anything you – no?
No.
Do you live old-timey
stuff?
Are you
a human being?
Are you human? Do you breathe oxygen? do you poop? Like, do you process food? But I mean, do you make the active choice to like sort of not get super sucked into technology, not get super sucked into all that stuff? Or you're just not
no,
into
I,
it?
There was a period of time over the course of a year where I did play this. I did play a game. Was it called Doom?
Is that Doom? Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Is that
yeah?
That right?
Like a first person shooter? You're going through a
yeah, and I think I lost an entire year just like in a room. And then like I got my friend hooked on it. And then I think at one point I saw how bad off he was and what I'd done to him. So I went, oh fuck. And I just,
sorry.
Oh no, you know what? It wasn't doing wrong. It was called City of Heroes.
Okay.
Do you remember that game? Did you ever play that game?
I don't know if I played that.
So you there were City Heroes and then there were City of Villains, and you created a character, and as you gained experience, you became more powerful, and you could get new kind of qualities, or you know, you could have flying power or like lightning or whatever. And so there's a point where you get to like level 45 and you're kind of an unbelievable badass, right? Yeah. Rolling through the city. And And I remember I saw my, you know, I walked in the room and my friend was just like hunched over the computer, just like staring off, twitching. And I went, oh no. And I went up and I, on my own computer, I pressed delete on my character.
That's a very bold thing to do. Wiped it out. Oh God, it was that hurts
the
me.
Only way. And I, it was tough. There were a few days where I can't believe I did that. I worked so hard to create that character, but it was the only way to save myself.
Yep.
And then since then, I've never done anything like that again.
That's really smart. That's a very hard thing to do because what a lot of gamers will do is go, oh my God, I can't believe I spent all this time doing that. But rather than really sit with that, I'm just going to play more to distract myself from feeling about how weird
it is. That makes sense also.
How do you distract yourself, or are you good sort of being alone? Are you good kind of just being with yourself?
I'm good being with myself. Yeah, I mean, I like daydreaming, so maybe that's a distraction.
Yeah.
But I think a lot about nothing important.
Yeah.
And nothing of value. But I daydream a lot. Yeah, I'm very comfortable being alone.
Do you write? Do you journal or anything? Do you keep any kind of?
I don't. You couldn't read my writing. I couldn't read my writing. That's why I don't do it. I tried it before. I look back and I said, there's 3 months of things I have no idea what I said. So can't read that. But I don't, and I'm a terrible writer.
You think so?
Yeah, awful.
Why? What makes you think that?
I don't know, because the few sentences that I could read were just awful.
You just didn't like them.
It didn't make any sense.
So you don't have any. You don't have any desire to be a writer. No desire to do.
I wish I could actually, but I can't.
Yeah,
it's just not happening.
Do you? What's sort of your process for? I mean, do you just hang out? Do you? Is there any? Do you have a hobby? Like, what do you like to do? Like, what do you do? Because you, it feels like you will take, you know, breaks between stuff instead of just, I'm going to do 10 movies a year. So is it just kind of disconnecting and going away and traveling, or do you just like to sit?
I don't travel much.
No?
No, I mean, for me, being home is a vacation, right? Because usually when I work, it's away from home.
Yeah.
So I'm usually eager to get back home. But, you know, I do a bunch of stupid shit. I mean, nothing like exciting, but it's just like my life. It's one of the few things that I have that isn't, you know, public.
That's good.
But, you know, not exciting.
That's, and I feel like that's so, you know, being a couple gents in their 40s, I embrace the boring stuff. And I love being in pajamas at like 6:30. There's nothing more fun than just
that's
like
embarrassing. I'm in it at like 5:45, at 3 p.m. The moment that I can, I'm in it. By the way, for the record, I'm 33,
and I'm 29. Okay. I just meant someday when we are in our 40s.
You don't look great. I gotta be honest.
Well, I got you know dragged. I lived at the beach for a while and ate a lot of sand, and it didn't sunscreen. You know, I didn't use sunscreen and. Yeah, it is really important to kind of keep those spaces for yourself, because I feel like there's so much about our culture that just wants every piece of things to consume them, every piece of a person. And I think you, having been an actor from such a young age, I'm assuming that's where you sort of learned, like, okay, I'm going to keep some peace for myself and not, you know, not get sucked in by all this stuff.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, now we're making a big deal out of it, and I'm going like, it's not really that big of a deal. I just thought I wouldn't talk about, you know, going to cryotherapy. on La Cienega Boulevard, just across from Real Food Daily. Like, maybe some things I want to keep to myself. I'm in there for 3 minutes, precisely. My favorite song. So... you know what I mean? But it's like, it's just stupid shit like that, right?
Yeah.
Just, you know, hang out with your friends. I don't have friends. That's such a lie.
Yeah, there's probably a couple friends in there. You listen, that one guy, you ruined his life. He's probably still playing City of Heroes. Probably just got to rescue him.
There alone.
It's that poor son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about two things you did in the 80s that I love? Is that okay? Parenthood's one of my favorite movies. I think it's a beautiful film. Do you... remember much about it? Did you enjoy it? Was it a weird?
I did. So here's what's the thing that sucks most about being a child actor. Like, working as a child is amazing. It's the most exciting kind of experience that you've had. And just being around all the different technicians and the camera, it's just endless how inspiring and exciting it is. But then you have to log in school. And so that's brutal. So you'll get a break from set where you're not working. And everybody else kind of goes off to the trailers and they hang out, they go to craft service and they talk. And you have to go to the trailer and like sit with the teacher and like log hours. So I remember doing that and being very angry about it. But it was actually what I remember is doing the first costume fitting, and it was suggested that I wear this denim jacket that had a lot of pins on it.
Yep.
And I remember feeling like that's not who he is. I don't know. I was 14 years old or 15 years old, and I was really bothered by the fact that somebody was telling me what I was supposed to do with what I thought were my clothes, and it didn't make sense to me. And I was really intimidated to talk to Ron Howard, the director, just because I knew him from TV, and I was scared, and I didn't know if it was my place. I remember finally just being so kind of like overwhelmed and angry that somebody was telling me that that's what I had to wear, that I finally went up and I said to Ron, I'm going to talk to you. And I don't know if I would wear these pins on the jacket. And he's like, oh, well, you shouldn't do that then. And I was like, what? He said, well, no, I mean, if that's what you don't feel is right, well, let's talk about it. And I couldn't believe that. And then suddenly I got so excited about like this idea that it was sounds fucking cliche and stupid, but a blank canvas. And suddenly I could kind of infuse my own ideas of who I thought this kid was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it ended up being like this really this amazing moment for me of like working with this director that was this really successful director, and he was famous and I knew him. But he was so cool, and he encouraged me to like just infuse my ideas of what I wanted the character to be.
That's really cool, because had that gone a completely different way,
fired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you would have been
ungrateful shit. You know how lucky you are to be working with Steve Martin? You're gonna come in and talk about fucking pins on your jacket? Get the fuck out of here.
That sounds like a Ron Howard.
That's what I would do. Some geek came to me and go, are you fucking out of your mind? Get out of here. Well, luckily, it's Ron Howard, and he was cool, and he was an actor, and he probably understood what that was like.
Right.
You know, and he really encouraged me to do that. And created a monster.
Well, he also probably understood that as kids, especially at that age, like 14, 15, can be very delicate. And if you shoot them down and don't at least listen to them, then those are very pivotal moments in their development. Mm-hmm. And that could totally fuck a kid up forever. And so he was just, you know, I'm glad
again,
you got the
something
right
else
guy.
I would never consider.
Exactly.
But good thing that he's...
I don't know. I mean, I watch that movie once a year. I just think it's such a beautiful, it's timeless. Nothing about it feels like, oh, this was made in the 80s. Like, it's just such this perfect little family story. Mm. Do you ever go back and watch any of your stuff when you've had some distance from it?
No, I haven't. But you want to do that?
Like, yeah, let's get together.
Like a date night?
Yeah, we'll do cryotherapy. And then we'll pop over to Real Food, and then we'll watch Parenthood.
I'm still in my 30s, 33.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep, yep.
So I imagine like maybe like my mid-40s or something.
Right.
Becoming sentimental. I mean,
there's a little bit of gray. There's a little like 30s.
What do you mean?
It's just a trick of the light.
Yes.
Oh, it's a light. Yeah.
It's called an optical illusion.
I'm so sorry. It's so cool to be millennials, you guys.
Is that what we are?
I think so.
Yeah,
wait, you can't look me in the eye now. I feel weird.
It's like stepbrothers. How did it suddenly devolve into stepbrothers? I can't even look you in the eye right
now. Look you in the eye right now because we are so millennial. I mean, I like, you know, the getting older thing I think was always freaked me out. And I love it. I think it feels good.
best time I've ever had.
Yeah.
The last 5 years of my life have just been the best. And my 30s were great. I loved it. I'd always was dreading it growing up, but just I love it. Time of my life.
Is it because you think you are just more comfortable with yourself now, or just because you don't stress? Because
you know you're dying, and you're like, I better fucking enjoy this. You're so cocky when you're young, right? You're like, everything sucks, so stupid. But then you're like, oh, I'm literally dying,
and
I better start enjoying this.
Yeah. Because we're time millionaires in our 20s and 30s, and then after that, it's like, this could be the day, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't really know what it is, but I do think that's actually part of it. I mean, in some ways, you start becoming aware of your mortality, and you go like, life's fucking amazing.
It is, and maybe and then the idea that if you used to get tweaked up about like this fucking latte is not and you're like, I'm gonna be dead. So no one's gonna get. It doesn't matter. Who fucking cares? Like nothing is so. Nothing is that important anymore.
Right. Except traffic and bad drivers.
Yeah. Because for fuck's sake, you're not going to have your turn signal.
The left lane is the fast lane.
Exactly.
Like, the fucking reason people are entering and exiting from the right, so the left lane is fast. Let's move.
You can't do 60 in the fast lane. Just speed limit is 65.
What's wrong with you?
That and texting.
Well, it doesn't make any sense.
Also, texting during a movie, the light does affect everyone. But other than that, nothing else is really that big
Everything
of a deal.
Everything else is fine, and we're very calm.
Nothing. Well, also, sometimes at restaurants, if you say, look, I kind of have a garlic allergy, and then they fucking load shit up with garlic anyway, but that's infuriating.
Right.
But other than that, there's not that much to really be that worked
up over.
To be
honest, I feel like there's a few more, but I don't want to take up
this whole time. Want to take up too much time talking about the list
of
things.
Now that we're talking about actually, I feel worse now than I did before.
Good. Get angry. Do something.
And now I'm angry about my 40s. And I'm angry about dying, and it's all over. And this is a fucking catastrophe.
So nothing except this particular podcast is worth getting worked up over. It's right. The traffic and the movies and the food thing and the dying and then also this podcast.
Right. I love that it's the traffic, the movies, and then the dying.
And then the dying.
I think that should be number one.
No, I like it fourth. I like it fourth.
Yeah.
For me.
I think Seinfeld had a joke about that. I'm not going to tell the joke because I'll fuck it up. But that people's number one fear was speaking in public.
Yep.
And the second greatest fear was dying.
Yeah. Well, I understand that because when people speak in public, no one wants to be embarrassed. No one wants to have other people point at them and go, you're dumb. And there's that feeling of dread. Then there's also, like, dying is just like it. There's no, unless it's a lengthy process.
You're not aware that you've done it wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
So nobody can criticize you for dying in the wrong way.
Yeah, you can't fuck that up. It's just, it is what it is.
Right.
No one's gonna, unless it's like a hold my beer moment. You're like, hold my beer, I'm gonna get a selfie with this alligator, Then, yes, then you should be shamed. But other than that, you're right. There's no real wrong way to do it. Are you a public speaker at all? Do you like doing public stuff?
No. It's terrifying. I go into fight or flight.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I just shut down. I don't know what it is.
And do you think do you trick yourself into like, well, I'm going to be a character of someone who likes getting, like, do you have any ways that you get around it?
I tried that once and then I turned to myself and went, oh, you're out of your fucking mind. You play a character that enjoys this. So then we had that conversation.
You and the character?
Yeah. But no, there's no way around it.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you enjoy doing that you want to try? I mean, do you want to direct? Do you want to do more? Do you want to produce a bunch of stuff? Or are you pretty happy just kind of focusing on one thing at a time?
I don't know.
Do you live like kind of in the moment? Do you just sort of moment to moment kind of person?
Well, I don't know. Like, are you going to mock me?
No.
Well, I don't know. Before you said this thing about, oh, hippy dippy and people doing the things, I don't know. I better not say that.
No, it. This is the friendliest,
what do you
safest.
Mean? I mean, you do both things. I mean, you fantasize about the future, you have goals, and then you have no choice but to just live in the moment.
But some people really are, and I've talked to a lot of people, a lot of people really kind of favor one or the other. Some people really just go, you know, I just kind of like to go where the, you know, wherever I'm going for that day. And then other people like to sort of meticulously try to control the outcome and control the outcome. And
I gave up on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gave up on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever read any Stoic philosophy?
No.
It's great, though. It is good.
I'm sure, but I never learned to read.
Oh, gosh, this is really embarrassing. I'm so sorry.
No, that's all right. I'm comfortable with it.
This would explain the writing problem.
That's what it is. All these years. Yeah.
Oh, but, fuck, I'm illiterate. Yeah. God damn it. Yeah. This entire time. Yeah. I had no idea. I'm so sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
Listen, when we go to date night, we're going to watch the movie, and then I'm just going to bring a we'll get some coloring books, and we'll get some alphabet books. That'll be fun. You'll have a good time. You have a really good time.
I mean, I tried that when I was younger, and it didn't work out well, so I don't know if it's going to work out this time.
But, as a grown man of 33,
yeah.
I really do believe.
You think that it's necessary?
I feel like maybe, although you've managed to do a pretty good job without it all this time.
That's what I think.
You know what no one stands up for is illiteracy. Maybe.
I'm going to do a PSA.
Kids, it's smoking fit. Don't read. I didn't. Things are great.
Exactly.
It can't get much better. As a matter of fact, think of how many things, if I could read, I might have gone on the internet and been discouraged.
That's a great point.
I'm telling you, not enough people are standing up for
figuring
illiteracy.
We're figuring it out. Making the world a better place right here, right now. It's happening. You're welcome.
Do you feel like you can go out and just kind of live a normal life and not get pestered and not get bothered? Do you feel like a part of it?
Yeah.
That's great.
Usually. It is great. I've been really fortunate because I've managed to continue to work with people that I really admire on movies that I enjoy being a part of. And they never make any money and nobody sees them. And so I get to do the thing that I love, but not have to deal with, like, you know, people, trying to take too many pictures or autographs or anything.
No one saw Gladiator. No one saw fucking Gladiator.
It was 20 years ago, you know. Or, sorry, 13 years ago.
I'm going to save. Don't verify that, by the way. Don't verify that.
IMDb line.
Yeah.
But seriously, I really enjoy that, and I don't know how I feel so fortunate because I've continued to be cast in movies that I really want to be a part of.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happens. So I'm just I'm so grateful. But so yeah, mostly it's fine.
But how do you know? I mean, it's you have a really good track record of just picking really juicy stuff with great characters that people enjoy. I mean, do you have an internal thing? Is it just like a, you know what, I think I could really bring something to this? Or is it you are just kind of a fan of the thing and go, I want to be a part of this in some way?
Yeah, I never think I can bring something to it. I think usually the deciding factor for me is the filmmaker. It's really that simple.
Yeah.
More than the character.
Yeah.
And so that has been what's guided me, thinking a majority of my decisions, maybe a few decisions when I was younger. I didn't approach it in that way, but certainly the last 10 years, it's just been guided by the filmmaker.
And so when you get something that you look at and you go, grow, you know, I'm a fan of this person's work, I want to just kind of sit down with them and see if we connect and vibe. And is that sort of the last part of that process?
Sure. I mean, sometimes I may not even be familiar with their work. but I don't, it's really about, how do we communicate? And are we after the same things for this film? Or sometimes do we disagree, which is really good also. I mean, it's one of my favorites. It's kind of like I don't know what's analogous, but it's hard to, it's not a science. It really is just like whether you click with somebody and whether you like them.
Yeah, but I think that's an interesting point about liking to disagree with people. Does that, is that to find compromises and sort of expand your comfort zones, or do you think it just the discourse is healthy and good?
Both. I mean, yeah. I feel like, you know, I don't know, there's some fucking saying, I can't remember, some director told me once, he said, you know, work with people that are smarter than you.
Yeah.
And so I feel like if you're agreeing with me, I go like, well, we're in trouble. Because if, like, if I have the best idea, then we're fucked. So I think I just, you know, I like it when, you know, directors disagree with me and you just start pushing each other. I mean, I think that's the best part of collaboration, right?
Sure.
You challenge each other.
Yeah. But it's also, I mean, you can't, you also have to have a healthy relationship to your ego to be able to do that, because most people, and I feel like this business enables stuff. Oh, I don't want to upset this person, so I'm just going to agree with whatever. And then I feel like that's how people can get fucked over. It's like, oh, no one said, you know, in retrospect, they go, yeah, we really didn't think you should. Why didn't someone say something before? Well, we didn't want to upset you. Well, that would have been helpful, though.
Yeah. No, I don't think a director can do that. I mean, I think that's kind of part of it, right? They have to have a really strong opinion. And I think that, you know, the actors have a strong opinion, too. Again, you just... You challenge each other and then hope for the best.
Yeah. I find that anyone who can have some semblance of feeling normal in, you know, in what we do is doing something right. And even if it's, you know, like self-deprecate or whatever it is, I don't know. But it seems like, you know, you manage to be pretty balanced through all the craziness.
Yeah, I mean, my life... Well, it's affected by the work that I do. I mean, just in like, it's paid for my fucking life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But my life doesn't revolve around the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And it's not my friends. We've established that I don't have friends.
Right. If you did, they wouldn't be.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have a great family and think that's what my life is. I will forget. I mean, my life is so completely removed from the entertainment world that, you know, I'm not filming anything. I haven't worked for 8 months or more than that since we wrapped this film. And so the first time back when we had to go to Venice to start press, it's just, it takes me a couple days to like readjust and remember like, oh yes, this is something that I do in my life and this mm-hmm. is part of my life, because it's so distant from every other part of my life and how I yeah. normally live. So that's that. It's really interesting.
Joaquin, wake up. Joaquin, wake up. It's time for cryotherapy.
Oh, my goodness.
No,
it was the worst.
It was great. No, you're not at all. Actually, it was an absolute pleasure talking to you. I mean, I'm not.
Is he fucking with me?
I'm not being. No. I'm not.
Oh.
I'm a very sincere person. I do default to being snarky sometimes, but I'm also a genuinely, genuinely sincere person. And it was really, I don't know, these days where you have to talk all day and then you come in and then you just have to fucking talk to some dude you don't know for an hour about random stuff. It, I don't know, you roll with it really well, and I really appreciate it. It was very nice.
Well,
it
was enjoyable. I left a gift for you guys.
Oh my gosh, thank you for chewing up so much paper.
You're so welcome. It's plastic, which is even worse. So I've ingested like quarter pound of plastic here.
No, it just makes it's just making your system immune to whatever is in all of our water, and so you're fine, actually.
It is a shame that it's the end of the day, because I do feel like I'm fading, and that bums me out, because
you don't seem like it, though.
Especially because you have like such amazing energy.
Oh my god! But I haven't had to do this all day.
Right.
You know, like right. I got to exercise today and have a late breakfast, and you right. know, like.
But I meant that genuinely, not like you've got great energy.
Oh
no, it's amazing.
This guy's
like,
great.
You start analyzing the shit that you say, and yeah. it can be interpreted in a number of ways.
No. You know,
I meant that sincerely.
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for your time. And I'm excited for people to see the movie. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of the year and, you know, get some rest and manage to keep staying away from social media and video games.
Got it.
Yeah. Handled. Maybe I'll see you next year for your 34th birthday.
Yay! 34. Thank you.
Good to see you.
It's nice meeting the you. End.
That was ID10T podcast number 1022 with Joaquin Phoenix. And today's word salad wrap. You know, I've actually been thinking about the name word salad wrap. I liked it initially because it was intentionally clunky. But I wonder if it should just be called idiot salad. Is idiot salad too on the nose? ID10T, idiot salad? Because it is kind of the same. I don't know. What do you think? Let us know. What are you looking at ID10T.com? Again, at is just the at symbol. It's not at in the email name. That was my mistake for thinking I was so fucking clever. What are you looking at ID10T.com? Stay with word salad wrap or just change it to idiot salad? Let's see how this sounds. Now it's time for idiot salad. I don't know. I can't decide. I'll leave it up to you and try to remove yourself from it a little bit, because if you're used to word salad wrap, you might go word salad wrap because I'm used to that. But then try to displace yourself from it and look at them both evenly if you can. And I don't know. Whatever gets the most emails, I guess we'll win. But let's talk about... Because then, oh my God, what if no one emails? And then if no one emails, that means no one's listening. And then if no one's listening, then what am I even doing? And then everything's going to go to shit, and it's all going to light on fire, and I'm never going to work again. And oh my God! You've just witnessed a catastrophizing moment. How many of you in the melee of your day catastrophize? Because that is what today's... whatever rap that we're going to end up calling it is about. So I read a fun Marcus Aurelius quote which said, "Never let the future disturb you. You will meet it, if you have to, with the same weapons of reason which today arm you against the present." Now, I am a skilled catastrophizer. I'm real good at it. Because it is all about trying to prepare yourself. It's like disaster preparation. It's a survival mechanism, right? You want to make sure that you're as prepared as possible for any situation. You know, for me, I played a lot of tournament chess when I was growing up. And so it was all about just trying to see every possibility and seeing, does this possibility either end with the defeat of the other person or them defeating me? And so, you know, as great as chess can be in terms of analytical thinking, there is the over-analytical thinking, which pays dividends to your anxiety levels. So catastrophizing, it just isn't fucking worth it. Don't do it to yourself. I mean, you know, I'm saying this to me as much as I'm saying this to you, as I feel like I do a lot of things, because we're all students of life, you guys. And I'm sure you've been in a situation where something little triggered some bigger thing, which led to a bigger thing, which led to a bigger fear, which led to a bigger fear. And then ultimately, where it all leads is kind of the same thing. It's like, it's all gonna burn. And listen, sometimes, yeah, things do, you know, but the number of times that happens is very, 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 very slim. And even if it does, are you really gonna be prepared for it if you freaked out about it the whole time? There's a great, I think I saw it on, I don't know, it was on Get Motivated or Our Stoicism or one of these great brain type subreddits that I subscribe to that are all about brain health. And it's a Venn diagram, and there's a giant circle that says things I worry about. And then there's a much smaller circle, about, you know, 10% of that circle, that says things that can happen. And then in that, there's a tiny little dot that said things that do happen. And that really resonated with me because, you know, how much of your life could you get back? How much of your mental and emotional health could you get back if you were able to stop yourself from catastrophizing? And I feel like it happens in a series of, I sort of liken it to like rocket boosters, where, you know, you have one sort of negative thought and it's almost like your brain is scanning for the next level of negative thought. And you're like, boo, and you zero in on something that's slightly more catastrophic. And then that kind of kicks up the fuel, right? Because it's boosting you out into
fucking anxiety orbit. And so you then that scans and then that finds a slightly more catastrophic one and so on and so on and so on. And then you're just kind of in it. And it doesn't solve anything. And it doesn't really help. And so if in those moments you could just maybe sort of write down, you know, here's what I'm feeling, maybe seeing it from a third person perspective will help you realize like, oh yeah, I think I'm doing that weird thing again. Or if you're able to just sort of brush it off before it jumps two or three levels deep where you, you know, when you get to that first level of, you know, slight catastrophe where you're like, oh, well, if that happens, I guess I'll just figure it out. Or nothing I can do, you know, whatever. I'm not saying don't be prepared for things in life, but, you know, there is that section of diminishing returns where you can't be more prepared. You're just torturing yourself. And so I think that's what I'm saying today. And if you've never even thought that that's a thing you do, but this resonates with you in some way, then just sort of, you know, start do look up catastrophizing and what people do. But don't use that as an excuse to catastrophize. Oh, I never thought of these other more horrible possibilities. In general, you are okay. How about that? In general, you're okay. You've gotten to this point in your life, no matter what you face, no matter what hardships you face, and you're still here. And that's worth something because you are worth something. So I appreciate you. Thank you for listening to Word Salad or Idiot Salad. Whatever we're going to call it, you can shoot an email to whatareyoulookingatid10t.com. And I hope to see you in New York this weekend, October 3rd, 4th, and 5th at Caroline's. Go to carolines.com for tickets and have a wonderful rest of your time frame in the day, whatever that may be. And I'll see you in your ears real soon.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.